This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Governor Rick Snyder signed legislation earlier this month which includes a prohibition on local leaders using taxpayer resources to share factual information about ballot issues. That got attention from lawmakers, local government officials, and media organizations. But that legislation also includes other changes to campaign finance law. We're going to discuss some of them with Rich Robinson. He's been attempting to track how money is raised and spent in Michigan for the past 15 years with the Michigan Campaign Finance Network. Rich Robinson, thanks for being with us again.
Thanks for having me, Gordon.
Let's get to the whole issue of what local government officials can say about ballot issues in a moment. But first of all, I want to note what Detroit Free Press columnist Brian Dickerson said about this campaign finance bill, calling it a victory for big donors. Is that accurate? And how is it the case that it's a victory for big donors, if so?
It is a victory for big donors. Here we are, 2 years after contributions to candidate committees were doubled in Public Act 252 of 2013. And now, in a provision of this bill that I would call the Andy Dillon provision, because Andy Dillon had incurred a debt in his 2010 gubernatorial primary campaign that he sought to fill by a second contribution from a committee that had already given him the maximum amount. That attempt was disallowed by the Department of State, and so what we have here is the legislature acting to enshrine that tactic into law. Here's what's wrong with it. It would be extremely easy for a candidate to make a bookkeeping entry that said, I have loaned my campaign $100,000 and there's a debt there. And they could get contributions before or after an election. If they're before, they can simply backdate them and, in effect, allow a campaign or a committee to contribute to the candidate, doubling again. So this is an open invitation to corruption. It's terrible public policy. And this particular provision of this bill never was discussed in a public hearing. This was introduced as a substitute to the bill on the floor of the legislature the last day that they met on 2015, late at night. This is classic, terrible legislating.
The Michigan campaign finance system is one that you have often described as being one of the worst in the country. Does this provision make it even worse than it was?
It does certainly make it worse than it was. I think it invites people to engage in fraudulent bookkeeping in order to bring more money into a campaign if they feel like more money is what they need to win an election. And again, the process of having done this is just counter to everything that should be there as far as transparency and accountability in government.
You mentioned fraudulent bookkeeping. Is there a good way of auditing and finding out if someone is, in fact, being completely honest with their books, or is that also tough to do in Michigan?
Well, it's impossible to do in Michigan because there's nothing in law that would require it. A good approach would be to say that every election cycle, some number of campaign committees are going to be audited, including bank statements and all the rest that verifies what's going on. And I think that if candidates and interest groups, political action committees knew that there was a potential that they would be the number that came up in a random draw, that would be a much greater incentive to them to hew to the straight and narrow and be more accurate and honest about their campaign finance bookkeeping.
There is also a prohibition on collecting contributions from an employee for a union's political action committee. Is this tipping the balance more towards corporate interests than union interests?
Well, it is, and I think more specifically, it's tipping the balance toward Republican interest as opposed to Democratic interest. I think there's a strong belief that the funding base of the Democratic Party is through unions, and if we can only defund the unions, then the Democratic Party will fold and the Republican Party will win ultimate victories. I think you see that in the whole right to work movement, in the attack on prevailing wages. Anything that can be done to try to knock down unions is part of a large part of the Republican legislative agenda. I think if the majority party in the legislature would devote more time to the health, education, and general welfare needs of the citizens of this state rather than playing these spy versus spy political games, all of us would be a whole lot better off.
The governor, when he signed the legislation, called for what he said should be a fix to this part of the bill, which puts a prohibition on local government officials putting out information about ballot issues. Do you see any signs that there's going to be a fix that addresses that problem and does allow at least the very basics, factual information, to be disseminated to the voters before we cast our ballots on a tax increase, a millage increase, that sort of thing?
Well, as we talk on the morning of January 20th, there is a bill that it purports to be cleanup of this Senate Bill 571. What it will do is essentially acknowledge that the Michigan legislature didn't have the prerogative to repeal the First Amendment of the United States Constitution, and public officials can speak to the fact that there are millage questions. But this still prohibits educational initiatives on the part of public corporations, libraries, school systems, municipal governments, and the like, to say why it is that they need to propose a millage question. And I find a real irony in this, in that Governor Snyder announced last night that he was going to be having a public infrastructure commission to look at the long overdue repairs to our state's infrastructure. How does he expect that local governments who have to pay for that or pay for those infrastructure improvements will be able to educate their public in order to understand why it is they're being asked to pay a millage for this kind of action? In effect, when there's no capability on the part of the public body to educate the public on why they need a millage initiative, the default position of the voter is going to be no if they don't understand why millage is required. And in this bill that Governor Snyder signed and asked the legislature to fix essentially makes his proposal for a report from this infrastructure commission a dead letter. It's not going to be implemented if local governments aren't able to educate their citizens on why a millage is necessary.
And you're saying that a lot of the proposals would be at the local level. In other words, that it would be cities, counties, that sort of thing, which would put this sort of proposal on the ballot if there's going to be any sort of big infrastructure improvement.
I think virtually anything. I mean, we saw the legislature take a run at transportation infrastructure, and the tax increase they put on fuels is less than what the corner gas station is doing between Monday and Friday every week. And they have failed to raise enough revenue to address our transportation infrastructure deficiencies. When it comes to a lot of these other questions, whether it's libraries, whether it's police and fire operations, that's left to local governments. And in fact, what the state has given them is diminished revenue sharing, essentially reneging on a promise to share state sales and income tax with the local governments of this state in a way that allows them to be self-sufficient. So the bold tax cutters in Lansing have rolled the problem downhill to local governments, and now they don't want local governments to be effective in having a millage to correct the problem that's been handed to them.
Of course, Lansing has been preoccupied in large part for the past couple of weeks, and even before that, with the water crisis in Flint. Questions are really being raised about transparency there. The governor has said that he will share emails sent between 2014 and 2015 related to Flint. But I'm wondering, you know, groups like Common Cause are saying this is another indication of why we need the Freedom of Information Act and more sunshine laws related to the executive branch and the legislative branch in Michigan. Do you see this as part of the whole narrative surrounding the state, since you look specifically at campaign finance, of secrecy and the public not having a real good idea of how things are working?
Well, I think it is. I certainly think the governor is doing the right thing by releasing all his email messages on the whole question, the Flint water crisis. But I don't think things like we need to adjust and cherry pick the sampling we've done on lead presence was communicated to the governor directly. I think that was intradepartmental at the Department of Environmental Quality, and I think that's where a lot of this problem lies. But certainly transparency and accountability in government is appropriate. To me, this is yet another case, though, where an underfunded local government made a decision to go to a different water system, not the Flint River, but a new water system from Lake Huron. They were cut off by the Detroit water system, and in a penny-wise and pound-foolish move, chose to go to drawing water from the Flint River and not having the capability internally to manage that resource in a way that is appropriate, if it could have been managed appropriately. This is another problem of local governments not having sufficient funding to carry out providing for the basic health, education, and welfare of their citizens.
I want to note here before we come to the end that the Michigan Campaign Finance Network has named a new executive director, Craig Mauger, and so Rich Robinson is going to still be part of the organization as a member of their board. But Rich, we've had many of these conversations over the years, so before we sign this one off, let me kind of give you the floor here for a moment. If the state of Michigan were really going to have a campaign finance system that works, provides accountability, transparency, and yet recognizing the realities of what Supreme Court rulings have come down in the case of Citizens United and where the court would likely rule in the future, what would you say would be the best way for Michigan to go forward?
Well, I think it's important that all communications immediately preceding an election that are fundamentally about the qualifications of candidates for office ought to be treated as campaign expenditures and disclosed as such. The other major shortcoming we have is the absence of contribution limits to political action committees and to the political party committees, which allow a small number of very deep pockets to dominate the political scene in Michigan. There ought to be limits on what people can do in building up committees that have extreme influence in our electoral campaigns.
Rich, thank you very much for your time over the years and for doing your best to explain the ins and outs of campaign finance in Michigan.
Oh, thanks very much, Gordon. I appreciate the chance to talk with you as we have about all these issues. I think they're critically important for our democracy.
Rich Robinson is the former director of the Michigan Campaign Finance Network. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.